With the 36th pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the Jacksonville Jaguars select Miles Jack, linebacker, UCLA.
That is an awesome pick. I mean, he's a draftable tailback. He's a top five pick. All the rumors were Jacksonville in the first round, and they came back, traded up, got him in the second.
I've seen the guy line up number one receivers. I've seen him cover tight ends. I've seen him play running back. I've seen him flat back offensive guard. So he's got a rare combination and skill set that we just felt like it was time to pull the trigger. The risk was worth the reward.
This is honestly the place I wanted to be at. But I was telling everybody, you know, before the draft, like, if I could choose a place to come, it would be Jacksonville, just with the, really just starting with the head man, Gus Bradley. He's an honorable man. Me and him connected really quick. I felt like, you know, I could trust him in everything, and just where the program is heading, I feel like it was a great place to be a part of.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
Oh, he's back in the house with us, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Lagerman here with you. Happy Tuesday morning. Jaguars Today off and running. Jags will be on the field tomorrow with the Tampa Bay Bucs. They're practicing today, but they'll be on the field the next 2 days. Joint practices with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll break it down, not only what we saw last Thursday, what we've seen through training camp the entire offseason. We've got Jeff Lagerman at our disposal here. Logs, how you been?
Been good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like we haven't seen each other, but, you know, we just haven't had the regular Tuesday date set for the last several months. That's the way it goes in the off season. So
yeah, well, you got to gain the knowledge. You know, we can't do Tuesdays when they're practicing at 10.
That's right.
You know, so now that they close practice, with the exception of the two practices against the Bucks, you know, it's time to get back in the mix here with you guys.
Did you do many joint practices in your career with other teams in training camp?
Yeah, we actually had, I think my rookie year I was a holdout, so if we did it, I missed it because I was, I think, out for about 2 weeks. But we had a tradition. We used to actually leave New York and go to Pennsylvania, Carlisle, where the Washington Redskins had training camp for years. And then after we worked out with the Redskins for a couple years, then we ended up going with the Philadelphia Eagles, where they came up and practiced with us. And it's good. I liked it just because, you know, after a while you just get tired of seeing the same looks, you know, because, you know, every week that you play in the National Football League for particularly my position as, you know, as a pass rusher defensive end, you don't want to, you get tired of seeing the same thing. And, you know, you want to try different moves that are going to work on different people. You know, so you wanted to have a little bit of that different flavor. You know, it's like a menu. You know, every week the menu's different, so you wanted to have a different menu for practice. And you got that by practicing against other teams. And the best part was that, you know, after, you know, I mean, me and Baselli used to have this thing, you know, where we'd have two fingers across the chest, and it was, okay, let's just make it sound really good and growl, okay? And, you know, it wasn't all that competitive at times because, you know, we were just tired of it. You know, we were tired of each other. And then when you go against, you know, Ron Heller, you know, or Jim Lachey, you know, at those times, those were the tackles for the Eagles and also the Redskins, you cranked it up a little bit. You know, cranked it up. The intensity went up. And, you know, especially when you had a crowd around you, you know, you're doing one-on-one pass rush or one-on-one, nine-on-seven kind of drills. And all of a sudden there's, you know, there's 500 people surrounding your drill that are fans. Darn right, you're going to crank it up a little bit.
Does that make, are those settings more or less likely to produce injury, or is it, does it really not matter?
I think that it's probably less likely. And the reason that I say that is because you are cranking up the intensity. You're a little bit more aware, you know, and so you're matching your intensity to the situation. Whereas sometimes in a monotonous practice setting in training camp, one guy's tired of it and bored of it, and another guy's trying to make the team, and you got two different levels of speed, you know. So I think there's probably less of a chance for some injuries, but then others, because, you know, the contact's a little bit more violent, maybe it increases.
All right. Jeff Logman's in the house with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. The question of the day in your honor, people don't always get the chance to talk to you in the off season. So if you've been storing up that question for Logs, whether it's about the upcoming season, training camp right now, last week's preseason game, the game against the Bucks this upcoming weekend, any move the Jags made or didn't make in the off season, bring them to the table. That's our question today. If you could ask Logs one Jaguar related question, what would it be? And get us off and rolling on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at LOGS56 Logs56. That's an easy one to remember.
Yeah.
And the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business, 641-1010. The phone number, also the text line number, driven by Duval Ford. I think we've given you enough outlets to communicate. Overall, Jeff, I've heard some of your opinion on it, and I've listened to the game broadcast as it was going on. What do you make of preseason game one, if you're going to assign it a letter grade overall in terms of what the Jags were hoping to accomplish and what you think they did?
Overall, I thought it was a really good start. You know, I give it a B+. Because I thought that it looked organized. You got off to a fast start on offense, which was one of the questions that, you know, coming out of last year, you know, can they be able to make that happen? A lot of the talk all season has been is that we need to run the football better. They came out, they ran the football very well. I thought T.J. Yeldon looked fantastic. Chris Ivory looks good. You know, and any time you add a guy like Chris Ivory, it makes another guy like T.J. Yeldon better, just because it's competition and, you know, you're going to have to fight for reps. And so I really like that aspect of it, running the football, taking the pressure off of the passing game. The passing game looks so easy because of the running game.
Yeah.
Defensively, okay. I wouldn't give it a high grade, but I'd give it a good grade because I thought that they got off the field. I would like to have seen a little bit more flash-type plays. But it is what it is. You know, it's a good start for them, and there's a lot of new moving parts to it. It was the first game for some guys, you know, so you could tell that the adrenaline kind of got the best of them, you know, a.k.a. Dante Fowler. You know, we didn't see what we saw in the scrimmage, you know. But it's going to get better on defense, and I'm looking forward to this week against the Bucks. I think it's a great matchup.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a bunch as we go along today. Again, 641-1010, probably the easiest way for you to get in on the phone lines or the text line. But we'll hit up social media questions throughout the show for Jeff today. Also, got a pair of tickets to Saturday's game, Tony. And we're going to come up with something very creative. And Tyler put all this thought into it. And then we're like, how the hell with it? We'll probably do caller three at some point. So be listening for your chance to score a pair of tickets to this Saturday's home preseason opener against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And if you're planning on coming out to practice, hopefully you've already pre-registered because it is capped. There are no walk-ups. If you haven't already registered at Jaguars.com to attend one of these next couple of practices or both of them, as the case may be, no walk-ups. So just letting you know, don't want you to get up there and get disappointed at the gate. All right, we're off and rolling. Jeff Logman's going to be here not only for the next 2 hours, but every Tuesday going forward on Jaguars Today from 10 until noon, looking back at the previous week and previewing the upcoming opponent for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll get into all kinds of Jaguar angles straight ahead. It's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman at 1010XL World Headquarters on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Foods. You know what? Maybe you're heading out to a scrimmage in the next couple of days. Maybe you're going to do a little tailgating this weekend. Maybe you're just hungry for lunch. You don't want to sit there in the drive-thru, waste your money on a bunch of greasy food, and kill about 30 minutes of your hour lunch break. No, what you do, you head to Kangaroo Express, you head to Circle K, you head right to the Fresh Case, and you look for the Dandy line of sandwiches and subs. Dandy and the Anytime Deli line have got all the variety, all the high-quality ingredients, always fresh, always delicious, and always economical for you. It's a great formula, and it's helped Dandy stay not only successful and in business, but thrive now for over 6 decades. I've been a customer for over 2 decades myself, and I'll never go anywhere else for my quick food on the go. Dandy, they've got the breakfast sliders, they've got the lunch wraps, they've got options for everything. Folks, guarantee they're going to have something that you not only like, but you absolutely love. So do what I do, folks, whether it's heading to tailgating, whether it's lunchtime, or anytime you need food on the go, go out and make yours a Dandy today.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars Today on this Tuesday, getting closer to the start of the regular season. Wait, 26 days out, I think, right?
If you say so, yeah.
Sounds about right to me. 26 days out, a little less than 4 weeks, and we'll have Jags and the Green Bay Packers, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt all here with you.
Tyler doing a really nice job with the music there. I like that, Tyler.
You like that,
yeah,
huh?
It's good. It's good.
Tyler's a hot commodity around these parts right now. Let me just say that. there's an interesting story. We won't dwell on it too much, but it's something that bears watching at least. You know that Al Jazeera America report about the performance-enhancing drugs, right? Mm-hmm. When Peyton Manning went through, even though he retired, said, I'm going to go through this whole process. I'm going to show you everything. There's not going to be any cloud hanging over my head when I walk out the door here. And so the NFL cleared him 100%. The guy who wrote the original story retracted his claims in the story. So you can argue that there shouldn't be any investigation whatsoever, but the NFL feels like there should be. And they expect the players that were named to cooperate. Among those players, two guys that play for the Packers, Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers. James Harrison and who's the other? Mike Neal?
Mike Neal,
Neal's the other one, right? So you got four guys out there, and they've set a deadline of the 25th of August that they have to submit to an interview with the National Football League. And unlike James Harrison's request, it will not be held at his house, apparently. If they do not submit by the 25th, according to the stories out this morning, they will be suspended as of the 26th until and unless they do submit to an interview, at which time the league may decide you're still suspended. Maybe if you felt that they felt like you were trying to, you know, obstruct the investigation or whatever to a degree. But the potential, however small, is there. You got two key members of the Green Bay Packer defense that could have this hanging over them as we approach week one. The Jags open with the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. I'm kind of confused on this. I mean, first of all, if you had the story that was retracted and then you conducted an interview with Peyton Manning and it was found to be nothing there.
100% hogwash.
What would make the others different?
I don't think anything would. I think this, in my opinion, this is Roger Goodell exercising
his
clout.
The league is emboldened from the Tom Brady case, in which they were able to do things above and beyond what was considered just an equipment violation, which many argued that that's what should have fallen underneath. And the league is, you know, because this is going to be a contentious negotiations in the next CBA. And this is the league, I guess you could say, pissing on a fire hydrant, so to speak, marking its territory. And, you know, the more positions that they can obtain now, the stronger they'll be in a position of negotiation in the next collective bargaining agreement. I think it's all hogwash, and I think the league should just move on.
I understand people would say, hey, you know, the gut instinct. If you've done nothing wrong, what's the problem? But
here's the problem.
The NFLPA doesn't want to set a precedent.
So if some crackpot decides to open up a website.
There you go.
And starts to accuse different players in the league, like this false advertising that you've seen all over the internet nowadays. So-and-so going to get suspended because he's been using these supplements that have been found to have incredible effects. You guys have probably all seen that. And they're totally false. But so why should the league not just start investigating anything that pops up? Any false accusation, any kind of story that anybody writes? I mean, to me, that's going down the wrong road. And I think it's, you know, at some point, you know, yes, you have a league and a union that has to be able to work out a collective bargaining agreement. But also at some point as a league, you got to support your players against false claims and falsehoods. Otherwise, what kind of support are you going to have from the players in the league?
I guess, and in this particular case, I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree with you, but I guess the league's point of view would be, well, that's what we're trying to do. Let's clear their names so they don't have this hanging over their head.
But it would set precedent in my mind in that, again, any crackpot that starts to make
Understood.
Any accusations, then you would have to investigate all of them. You know,
I'll get on here every day and talk about those Tennessee Titans, let me tell you what.
Is that a legitimate news source?
It depends on your point of view, you know, whether you believe it is or not. But isn't Al Jazeera's American branch folding? I believe the whole branch.
I think it is.
Was
shut
down.
It has,
right? Yeah. I mean, the branch that reported this. Anyway.
Look, if it came from the AP, you know, or some other credible news source, yeah, follow up and investigate. But, it has been deemed not credible. And then the guy that wrote it retracted.
Right.
So what's the problem?
I don't get it on this particular one. I'm just putting it out there that this, at least right now, is a situation. My guess is these guys are going to hem and haw, and they're going to come in and do their interview. And because in the end, the NFL holds the power.
Well, you're talking about players that have not tested positive for anything. They haven't been caught with anything in their car. You know, I mean, this is all based on speculation and and potential falsehoods or rumor. You know, so I don't get it. I think that the league is taking the wrong approach here. But that's the course that they choose, and we'll see where it goes.
All right, let's get a few calls in. Yes, Tyler.
I think they kind of have to investigate it, though, because Taylor Teagarden was a guy who was caught on camera in the same documentary, was receiving supplements from the same guy that recanted his statement, Charlie Sly. And Taylor Teagarden was suspended 80 games for a failed test for PEDs. So it does have little merit, but I wouldn't say it has no merit.
Now, we'll find out where, either way, the league feels it's got enough merit to put this in place that
but
basically you've got a 10-day deadline.
Tyler, you know, you talked about, he failed a test with MLB. You know, it wasn't because of the story. He failed a test. You know, so where's the failed test with any of these guys in the NFL?
I understand, but what he's saying is, you know, this guy was named as a guy who then was proven to have been cheating. So it didn't seem like he pulled that name out of thin air, but, you know, I think he even admitted that he put some of these NFL names in there to see if it would draw the attention of a greater audience, and then did retract his position on it. We'll move on from that for now. 641-1010. We got phone lines lining up for you, starting with Lori downtown, who's got an interesting question for you. Good morning, Lori. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing great.
What's up?
Jeff, I was wondering, Jeff, if you could coach Dante Fowler for a day. What advice would you give him, or what would you coach him on?
Yeah, he's such a rare athlete. It would be a lot of fun to coach him up because, I mean, he does things naturally that just you can't coach. The instinct, the quick reaction, the suddenness, those things you can't coach. I mean, to me, the biggest thing with coaching Dante Fowler is just teaching him the responsibilities that he's supposed to do and just let his athleticism take over from there. But as a pass rusher, you know, it takes time because, you know, it takes trial and error to eventually have some teachings hit home and to really ingrain in the brain. But man, I mean, you want to talk, I'd be a great coach if I had Dante Fowler.
Cause you got the clay to mold there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, what makes a great coach is he a great player? Is he a great coach? You know, I mean, a guy like Jerry Sullivan has been able to work magic for a guy like Allen Hurns, and you could say, well, there's a perfect example of great coaching. Allen Robinson, what he's made in the first couple of years, you know, but if you gave Jerry Sullivan, you know, the bottom end of the roster, some other team in the National Football League, how good would he be?
You can only take him so far.
Right. You know, so, you know, great coaching is certainly, it's part of the game, but, you know, I'll take great players any day of the week, and Dante Fowler's a great player. And since we're on the topic of Dante, you know, you could really tell that, you know, because I said in the broadcast, man, I can't wait to watch. It's going to be hard to watch anything in the game that's not Dante Fowler when he's on the field. And I watched him, and he didn't do anything. Watched the film on him. He really didn't do anything. The one play that he did make where he was kind of sliding down the line of scrimmage and great athletic move to avoid the cut block of the wide receiver coming from the other side and making a tackle that he falls off of and Delvin Smith cleans it up. But I just couldn't imagine for a guy like that, whose last game that he played was what? It was like January of 15.
Right.
In a bowl game, missed all of last year, and then comes back out in the first game, the adrenaline would have just been so overwhelming, and you could tell that was the case with Dante, or at least it appeared to be the case with Dante.
We'll see if it's the case
this
with,
week. I look forward to watching him. And you know, Ramsey, you know, because it's not so new and
right.
So fresh,
he's played, but just getting your feet wet for the first time in the National Football League.
Yeah, but Dante Fowler, you know, you could tell when he was rushing in the preseason game against the Jets versus against the scrimmage, he was a little unsure, but trust me, he is a phenomenal athlete, and the things that he can do. The thing that impresses me with the most with Dante is that when he goes 100 miles an hour and he's 7-8 yards into the play, a lot of guys, you can see the gas gauge start to kind of fall a little bit, and the suddenness and the quickness starts to dissipate. But he's just getting started. I mean, he must have an incredible body that gives him the ability to maintain a high level of exertion for longer than most other athletes. And I think that's the thing that stands out. Of course, he's, you know, extremely quick. He's got, there's some guys that just have it when it comes to delivering blows. Leon Searcy is a perfect example. Playing against Leon Searcy. In 6 inches, Leon Searcy could develop a wallop that you just couldn't imagine that anybody could develop. And Dante has that, where in 6 inches he can develop an overpowering hit to where he's going to knock people out of their socks. And it's just one of those God-given traits that some people have, and Dante has it.
He's Jeff Logman. It sounds like Bruce Lee. Didn't he have, like, the one-inch punch or something like that?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? He was able to generate all that power in one inch of space.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Lori, nice question that goes along with Jackville 17 on Twitter, at Deanster66Sam. He says, why doesn't Logman go take Fowler and Unique under his wing and give them the Logman juice? And there are a whole bunch of emojis that follow that. So,
well, I tell you what, both of those guys are going to be fun to watch and develop throughout the year. And look, they don't need my coaching. They have a very good coach. You know, I'm highly critical of defensive line coaches and what they teach and how they teach. Todd Wash, who is the defensive coordinator also, I have great respect for Todd. And trust me, he's teaching everything that I, you know, if Todd said, hey, come out and spend a day on the field with you, and then at the end of a drill or something, he'd say, hey, anything you can add to what I just said? Most of the cases, I'd say no. You know, because I think he's an excellent coach. And trust me, I know good coaches when they coach defensive line. He is a very good coach.
Oh, let's go to Mimi on the south side next up with Jeff Logman here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Mimi.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good to talk to you again. Jeff, it's good to have you back.
Thank you, Mimi.
Now, last Thursday's game, well, I should say last year, we had the issues of the players dropping balls at inopportune times. Julius Thomas on Thursday, scoring in the red zone, penalties, and the defense not being able to stop the other team from scoring. Now, I did see improvement with Blake and A-Robs continuing working together, and thank God Jason Meyer made all of his PATs and field goals on Thursday. So I hope that they all stay healthy, because Jeff and Tony brought up a good point last week in the broadcast when they said once A-Rob and Blake were taken out of the game, it was a totally different look. So my question is, what do you think the Jaguars' plan of action at this point should be? Because I saw a lot of those same issues on Thursday night as they had last year.
Yeah, well, let me address a couple of things. First off, the same issues that you thought that they had last year. You know, last year they had slow starts. They couldn't run the ball very effectively, and those were different Thursday night with the first team offense. And it's hard to evaluate and judge a preseason game sometimes unless you're aware of who's in the ball game and what's happening. You know, there was clearly a drop off when Blake Bortles left the ball game. And is that Blake Bortles? Is that A-Rob? I think it is, obviously it's both, but also it's a significant amount on Chad Henne. Chad Henne just is, he's not Blake Bortles. You know, anytime any team loses its first team quarterback, there should be a significant drop off from the first team quarterback to the second team quarterback. The pocket presence that Blake has is, in my opinion, well advanced for where he's at in this stage of his career. And it's something that Chad Henne has never been able to attain to the level that Blake is at right now. And Chad's been in the league much longer and has had way more starts under his belt. But the drops. Julius Thomas, no question. He's got to catch that ball. And I know Blake.
And he will.
Yeah, and he will. I mean, that's something that was like, wow. Because you know what? In practice, he never drops a
right.
ball. But it was in the game. You're like, wow. And it was interesting in that, you know, we get a sideline interview. Rick Blue's interviewing Blake Bortles, and he brings that play up, and Blake is like protecting Julius because, you know, I had to kind of double clutch it and I threw it low. Well, me and Tony both said in the broadcast, well, duh, it's a slant pass in the tight red area. That's where you want to put the ball, and that's where the receiver
needs
to catch
it. You're protecting him by putting it there.
Yeah. You know, so that was Blake basically, I think, taking the pressure off of Julius.
Which is one of the reasons he's respected in the locker room.
Exactly.
He's got that since the day he walked into the building.
A little miscommunication between me and him, but we'll get that right. Bad ball, gave it to him low, so I'll give him a better ball when it counts.
And Blake walks off the sideline and goes, Julius, what the hell, man? Couldn't have given you a better ball, right? I mean, just make the catch, man. You know, but that's what you want out of your leader quarterback, you know? So it's all good. But I thought that there were a lot of things that reared their head last year and was a pattern with this team that I thought that they got better with in Thursday night's game.
All right. He is Jeff Logman along with Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony's Jaguars Today. If you're on the line, stay right there. We'll get to you immediately coming out of the break. Also hit us up on Twitter, Facebook. If you have questions for Logs today, you've been saving them up this offseason, haven't had a chance to get in on some of the other Jaguar programming, and give them a call. Now's your opportunity at 641-1010. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
After a day off, the Jags get back on the field today. The Tampa Bay Bucks come to town on Wednesday and Thursday for a combined practice. Now, those practices are sold out, so no walk-ups will be allowed. Saturday, the two teams will take the field for the second preseason game of the season. And after an impressive run performance by Chris Ivory and TJ Yeldon, head coach Gus Bradley is excited to see what they can do.
What I can tell you now in practice and what we've seen, he's pretty good with outside zone and inside zone. Many gap schemes, I think we'll wait and see as that preseason goes. I really like TJ. TJ showed me, and I think he's a good zone runner, but he had a really good gap scheme run in the game. And I thought he showed great patience and hit it with the right tempo this year compared to last year. It's better.
It's Bucks-Jags 7:30 this Saturday at the bank. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we got Logman back in the house right now. It's Jaguars today on a Tuesday. We'll get to your phone calls in just 1 second at 641-1010. Tyler, I want you to play this one time, okay? This is what's known, we call this the Steal the Show drop, but go ahead and play it for
everyone. You can't have a newcomer come in and steal the show.
Everyone's favorite Jaguar fan. We've all heard that a lot, right? The next time you hear that in the next hour and a half, okay, the next time it plays on 1010XL, be the fifth caller at 641-1010, and we'll hook you up with a pair of tickets to go see the Jags and the Bucks for the preseason opener, the home opener for the Jags this weekend. So that's it. We're not going to play it again. The next time you hear it, whenever it comes in the next hour and a half, be caller number five, and we'll hook you up with that pair of tickets. All right, let's get a phone call in. We got a bunch on Twitter and Facebook coming in for you, Jeff. So it's just the fire questions at Logman Day. Nick is up in Pittsburgh, and he loves him some Jags. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Oh, good. How about you?
Good, thanks. What's up?
I was watching on NFL app the Jaguars game versus the Jets week one, and I was kind of shocked. I mean, the Jaguars took, like, I don't know, 11 penalties in that game. I don't know if you saw that.
Say again, the Jaguars did what?
A bunch of penalties. In
the game. 11 yeah. penalties, okay.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I'm like, yeah, I was just like surprised. Was that mostly defense of penalties or offensive?
I guess how concerned were you about the amount of penalties in the first preseason
really.
Game?
Not really. I mean, first preseason game, that's typically a sign of that. You know, you had Carson Tinker had one where he messed with the ball. That's a league's point of emphasis.
Right.
You know, so you know that that's going to happen in a preseason game. The points of emphasis are going to get called even if it's borderline. The Miles Jack, you know, those are aggressive penalties. I don't have a problem with that. False starts, things like that, I have a problem with because I think that that should not happen. I think there was only, one or two false starts, I think, in the ball game.
Yeah. I don't remember two, but I remember one.
Yeah, there's one that I remember, and I don't know if there was another one or not. But, I mean, it's typical. First preseason game, penalties happen, and one of the big reasons why it happens, you got 90 guys on the roster. You know, so you're trying to figure out exactly who to get on the field and the right combination of guys. So you get substitution penalties, and then you get guys to, okay, am I supposed to be on the field? And then all of a sudden they do something, and they're not thinking of their job because they're thinking of, okay, do I need to be on the field? But, no, I'm not overly concerned about that. I think that's a natural thing that just gets cleaned up as the preseason progresses.
Was that the first time we've ever seen in an NFL game a long snapper get an unnecessary roughness penalty?
Yeah.
Carson Tinker got one in the game.
Yeah, you know what, though? That was BS by Carson Tinker. Seriously. Yeah. I mean, it was just totally unnecessary. You know, he goes down the field, and the ball is dead. It's bouncing around, and he's going to take a shot at two different guys. And they're just standing there. I mean, really, Carson Tinker? What are you trying to get to be a tough guy?
It's not, like, he's trying to make his bones with the team. He's on the team, right?
Yeah, but it's stupid. It was stupid by him. What are you trying to do? Send a message? You trying to get your name called?
Hey, we're coming for your preseason title right here. I don't know what it, I don't know what the message would be in that circumstance. Yeah, but overall, just not that worried about it as long as it isn't a pattern throughout the rest of the preseason.
No, he had a couple holding calls. I mean, that's typical. But, you know, I think overall it wasn't sloppy and it wasn't careless penalties or anything of that nature. That gets cleaned up as the preseason progresses.
All right, let me fire some Twitter questions your way. This one from John at JW Lee 1979 on Twitter. Where do you think the Jaguars will show the most improvement? What one area will they show the most improvement?
In week two?
I think just in general for 2016, well, where will they compare to last year?
I think, number one, I think they're going to run the ball very effectively. You've got two backs, and really, I can't wait to see Jonas Gray at some point once he gets the opportunity and he gets back out on the field and he's healthy. He's another back that's physical. I think the running game will be much improved. I think they're going to be more efficient on offense. I think that defensively we're going to see splash plays, which is something that we didn't see last year. Game-changing type plays, takeaway, sacks, special teams. I still have a little bit of concern about that. Something that needs to become something that's a strength for this football team. I don't worry about the return game because I think that Corey Grant, Rashad Green are very talented. The coverage teams have to be better than last year. To me, and that's something that you wanted to see in the first preseason game, and you would think that as a roster gets more talented, that filters down to special teams because you have more talent now on special teams. That needs to be better in the rest of the preseason, and I'm a little concerned about it going into the season.
That's an understatement compared to their performance against the Jets. All right, moving along here, this one from Dr. Duvall, Bringer of Rain 88. Who is the one offensive lineman that you wouldn't want to go one-on-one with, if there is one? At your age, probably all of them.
But, yeah, I mean, all of them.
In your playing peak, is Parnell the toughest guy to tangle with right
no,
now?
No, I wouldn't. Yeah, I wouldn't have any fear of him. I think that they all. I don't think any of. I mean, I don't know. Maybe my mentality was you never scared.
It's
of anybody.
Not fear, but who would give you the biggest problem?
From a strength standpoint, Linder. He's the one guy that I would not want to go against because he's a guy that just has a strength level, plain strength level, that is one of the highest I've ever seen. Now, if you put him in the weight room, is he that strong? Probably not, but he plays the
functional
game with great balance, great hand strength, and great awareness. He is by far the Jaguars' best offensive lineman.
Tony, we gave him a wide open opportunity to go Tyler Shatley right there.
When he went
there
to the strength court, I was like, here it comes.
here comes Shatley. Stop
you
prime.
Know, Shatley will probably stomp Brandon Linder in the weight room.
In the weight room, right.
But functional, playing strength, Brandon Linder has it.
We just consider Shatley a Loggeman guy because you've advocated for Shatley, right, for the last year or so.
And he's played pretty well.
How and that's one of the questions we got in from Stoffelis Prime on Twitter. How well did Shatley play against the Jets?
I thought he
played
pretty good. I just wish the Jets had played their first team defensive line more than one series. But I get it.
Did Wilkerson play at all in that, Muhammad Wilkerson? I don't think
he
did.
No, he just came off a PUP.
Right.
Sheldon
right.
Richardson played.
Richardson
Muhammad
played.
Wilkerson
Leonard Williams not. Played.
And Leonard Williams was playing nose tackle now. Tyler Shatley was blocking Leonard Williams the entire game. He did a pretty good job. There was one that he gave up on the sack where he gave up what I call a push-pull where the defensive lineman comes with a power, kind of a bull rush move. And then when, as an offensive lineman goes to set the anchor to stop it, that's when the defensive lineman, if they're good and long, you know, which Leonard Williams is very long, can like push and then stop, pull, and then open up their body to go around. And that's exactly what he did to Tyler Shatley, the one play that kind of stood out with Tyler Shatley that wasn't great, but it's Leonard Williams, for God's sakes, who led the Jets defensive line
right
in pressures last year, even though they got Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson.
Hey, Tony, I talked with Rich Cimini, who covers the Jets last week for ESPN, and he said had the Jags taken Leonard Williams, the Jets would have been praying that Dante Fowler fell to him last year.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just interesting to see how that worked out there. If Kelvin Beachum's not ready for the start of the regular season, we don't know if he will, but right now, right, if you're going to play a game this week, Jokel at left tackle, would it be Chris Reed at left guard? Would it be Shatley at left guard, assuming Linder's healthy? How would they operate on the offensive line?
If it were tomorrow, it would probably have to be Chris Reed just because he's taking reps there. Because Tyler Shatley has yet to take a rep that I've seen at guard because he's been playing so much center. Now, I know that they would, because Brandon Leonard's been hurt and he's been missing some snaps in practice, it's kind of kept Tyler Shatley at center, much like with the injury to Josh Wells, it's now kept Luke Jokel at left tackle, and it's taken away some of the reps at left guard. So injuries are going to have a large part to do with that. But at some point, I would like to see Tyler Shatley get some snaps at guard because, you know, I think he's very – him and Chris Reed are pretty similar. Chris Reed's kind of a little bit of a bulldog now. And remember the big scrum that they had in one of the last practices
yes.
that was open to the media? I mean, one of the big reasons for that scrum was Chris Reed.
Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Because Tony and I were still over at the radio table
yeah.
when that took place, so we didn't get to
and
see all the
And it's not that he did anything cheap. It's just that he plays full speed, and he's very strong, and some guys don't like that, you know? So I like Chris Reed. You know, we talked last year a little bit about him, and I said that he's definitely going to make the practice squad because he plays the game with very good strength, and it was a nice find by the personnel department because he was an undrafted free agent out of, what, it was Minnesota, I think it is, that he's out of. And he played pretty well. I mean, for a guy that just was an undrafted free agent and what is his second year in the league, you know, last year he's considered only a first-year player because he didn't have any games that where he was on the active roster last year, but his second year in the NFL, I thought it was a pretty good performance. And also I gave my player of the game, I didn't do that on the radio, but I did after the game. I was in the locker room. I went up to him. I said, "Hey, man, you're my player of the game." He said, "Why?"
I said, I think you did mention that on the radio.
I couldn't remember if I did or not.
You were kind of like joking a little bit, like, who goes the distance in the first preseason yeah. game of the year?
But, you know, great opportunity for him. I mean, great opportunity for him because, you know what? I mean, if you're an undrafted guy and you're fighting for a roster spot to get the opportunity to be able to play an entire preseason game and put that on tape, I mean, there's a lot of teams that took notice of his performance in that game.
If he builds on that, he's going to make the team.
Or some team.
Right, some team, right. So that was the question, does Chris Reed make the 53-man roster? I think that was something that came in on the text line driven by Duval Ford. I think that'll play out, but he's put himself in pretty good position to
do that.
I think
he made a strong statement. You know, and the other reason why is that some of the other guys have been nicked up a little bit. Kadeem Edwards he was inactive for the game. Patrick Omame has been pretty good. I want to see more out of him. But Mackenzie Bernadeau, who many people were talking in the offseason about being possibly a starter, in my mind, I think he's fallen down a couple notches.
Didn't play at all the other night.
Yeah, but when I've watched him in practice,
Right, that's what I'm saying. I think they brought him in and hope for the best. And right now,
Shatley and Reed are ahead of all of them.
Gotcha. All right. He is Jeff Logman along with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Coming up, we've got This State in Football and the Honda Drive around the NFL. Don't forget, when you hear the Steal the Show drop, be caller 5 at 641-1010. You'll score a pair of tickets. Go see Jags Bucks this Saturday night at Everbank. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Shatley's greatest strength is his strength.
And now, This Date in Football History.
All right, got a lot to get to on This Date in Football History, presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. We'll start with some significant events on this date, including 1965. The AFL awarded its first ever expansion franchise, and they gave it to the folks down in South Florida. The Miami Dolphins came into existence on this date in 1965. 1976, the St. Louis Cardinals, that's right, kids, they used to play in St. Louis. They beat the San Diego Chargers 20-10 in Tokyo as part of the NFL preseason expo there. Famous birthdays for the state. This is where it gets interesting. Frank Gifford, Hall of Famer, played halfback, flanker, defensive back, wide receiver for the New York Giants, 8-time Pro Bowler, 4-time first-team All-Pro, Hall of Fame inductee in 1977. He was the 1956 NFL MVP. He was also a member of the All-Decade team of the 1950s. Got hit so hard by Charlie Bednarik, Concrete Charlie, that he basically retired in 1961.
Yeah.
Out for a season and a half, was the comeback player of the year in 1962 for Frank Gifford.
And I think he was Vince Lombardi's favorite Giant.
Is that right?
Yeah. I think so. Like, when he went to Green Bay, it was, I needed to find the next Gifford, was his idea when he got there.
Hey, he's pretty damn good. And, of course, a Monday Night Football broadcaster for a long, long time as well. He passed away in 2015. At the age of 84 plus, born on this date in 1946, Ron Yeary, if you remember, if you watch the NFL in the 1970s, one of the best offensive linemen out there for the Minnesota Vikings, 7-time Pro Bowler, 6-time first team All Pro, and a member of the all 1970s squad. Christian Okoye, the Nigerian Nightmare, led the league in rushing 1 year, was a 2-time Pro Bowler. He turns 55 today, born in 1961. Remember Ben Coates in the 90s, Jeff? I'm sure you do.
Mm-hmm.
5-time Pro Bowler, 2-time first team All Pro, second team on the all 1990s squad for
the
NFL.
He was my first ever fantasy tight end.
Was he?
Ben Coates.
He was amazing.
Very good receiver, but he was not a very good blocker.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, we don't care. We collected plenty of fantasy points off him. What is Eric Swan's claim to fame? Do you remember Eric Swan, the defensive lineman?
He never went to college.
Never
just
played
came out of
college
high school
football.
And played semi-pro and then got drafted.
That is correct, sir. He was born in the state in 1970. The former defensive tackle in the league is 46. Several former Jaguars born in the state. Willie Jackson, born in 1971, happy 45th. Zach Wiegert, born 1 year later, happy 44th to Zach. Cleo Lemon, born in this state in 1979. And then finally, Kevin Williams, the longtime Vikings defensive tackle. Only 36 years old, retired, though, as a six-time Pro Bowler and a five-time first-team All-Pro. That is this state in football history, brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you need some cosmetic work done, you're in the market for a family dentist, call their office at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of their comprehensive care services. That is this state in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Tennessee Titans have traded 2015 second-round draft pick Dorial Green-Beckham, the wide receiver, to the Philadelphia Eagles in exchange for offensive lineman Dennis Kelly this morning. San Francisco quarterback Thad Lewis will miss the entire 2016 season after suffering a torn ACL in the 49ers preseason opener on Sunday night. There's still a battle for the starting job in San Fran between Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick that Lewis wasn't expected to factor into. The injury does, however, move rookie quarterback Jeff Driskel up the depth chart. The NFL is now saying that the four players involved in the Al Jazeera report from January of this year will have until August 25th to comply with the league's request for an interview, or they will face discipline, which will include suspension. Those four players are Steelers linebacker James Harrison, Green Bay Packers linebackers Clay Matthews and Julius Peppers, and free agent linebacker Mike Neal. The Cleveland Browns activated wide receiver Josh Gordon off the PUP list yesterday, so he is able to practice with the team. Also today, the Kansas City Chiefs will activate running back Jamal Charles off the PUP list, allowing him to return to Chiefs practice. There is no definite timetable for either of those players' preseason debut, if they're even going to have one. And I mentioned yesterday that New Orleans Saints rookie defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins left practice with an apparent leg injury. We now know that Rankins suffered a broken fibula. While the team hasn't officially announced how they plan to handle the injury, Rankins could be eligible for the IR designated to return this year.
What were they saying yesterday? 8 to 10 weeks or
something,
6 to 8, something like that.
Let me add something about the designated IR. Last year you had to designate somebody going into that. In other words, you had to designate them with the possibility of return. This year you don't have to do that.
You can
that.
Just put them on IR, and if they
you can pull anybody back.
X amount of weeks, you can pull one guy back, right?
Exactly right. So that, I think that's a good change and a much-needed change.
Right, because if the guy you put on designated for return ends up having a setback or something like that, it kind of screws you.
Well, I think that, but then also it puts the pressure on the player to get healthy by a certain time. And it doesn't just allow the natural rehabilitation process to occur. And look, if one guy is ahead of another guy and another guy has a setback, you know, how does that guy feel? I mean, because you know, a lot of the guys that get that the designated part of it last year, they feel obligated. Well, I got to be back by this date, you know. So all of a sudden it's not just taking its organic, you know, route in the rehabilitation process.
All right, Tyler, by the way, check the text line. Your fans are weighing in this morning over the last few minutes.
Oh, no. One more note here, just coming across from NFL Nation reporter Mike Reese. He's actually at the Patriots-Bears joint practice right now. And Leonard Floyd, we remember he was carted off from the first practice, but he was only sick, so that was a good situation there. Well, now he's limping off from practice, looking down on his left knee. So,
all right,
not good news.
We'll find out if that's going to be something significant for Leonard Floyd going forward.
I got a question for you guys because, you know, I don't watch a lot of college football. I know you guys watch more than I do. Okay, with Floyd, he was perceived to be the man at Georgia, right? I mean, the top, you know, defensive player.
Yeah.
Right? Yes, at Georgia. Right.
Well, the Jets had a guy, you know, doing the board, Jordan Jenkins, who was their third-round pick out of Georgia, and he was their defensive MVP. I'm going, I mean, Floyd wasn't the MVP at Georgia? What am I missing?
Right. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. You know, I guess it could be, who knows, you know, was he an MVP because he did the dirty work kind of stuff? You know what I mean? I really don't know.
He's an outside pass rusher for the Jets in their defense, so he's got to be pretty decent at it.
Yeah, you would think.
I just thought maybe you guys would be able to shed some light on Jordan Jenkins for me. I don't watch college football.
My guess is in relation to Floyd is just seen as having more pro athletic potential. You know, yeah. He fits the mold better. He's a better high-end athlete that is, you know, his future they'll look at as being brighter. But
interesting, though.
Jenkins certainly a productive guy.
You know, that
Georgia.
Happens a lot. I mean, you've been around the league forever, Jeff. There's a lot of times where people overestimate kind of that athletic ability instead of just looking at a guy and saying he's a football player. Like, he just makes plays when we put him on the field, and maybe that's the case with a guy like Floyd Jenkins
maybe.
Looking at him.
All right, let's get some more questions in for Logs here off of Twitter. This one from Chad Cox, Chad T. Cox on Twitter. How did Miles Jack look? I know you mentioned him earlier, just in general for a debut for Miles Jack.
I thought it was a good start. And you know, the best part about Miles Jack, I know you guys weren't there, but you know, watching the pregame warm-up, who has the legendary pregame warm-up on the Jaguars roster that you sit there and you go, geez, that guy's like a machine.
I haven't watched a pregame warm-up in a while.
Paz.
Okay.
Paz goes through this whole routine in pregame warm-up that is, I mean, for me, I get tired watching him. I'm going, how does he even play a game after he goes through this, you know, entire routine of warming up? The best part and one of the best things that I saw pregame in New York was when Paz goes out for his warm-up, Miles Jack was in his pocket, his hip pocket, the entire time.
Doing everything, same thing.
Well, you know, trying to.
Right.
Which
says a lot for Posluszny at this
But the
stage.
Best part is that Miles Jack has really kind of latched on to Paz and is following his lead and is wanting to emulate the things that Paz does. And you know what? For a young linebacker coming in, in a guy that has the potential of a Miles Jack, you go, boy, isn't that good to see?
Smart.
Because, I mean, that's the guy that if you're going to emulate anybody as far as being a pro and how to conduct yourself, how to give it your all, and to apply yourself mentally, physically to get prepared for an NFL season, Paul Posluszny is the standard bearer for that. And so it's good to see that Miles Jack is following his lead. But as far as the game performance, okay. You know, I mean, he definitely, as a linebacker, because that's how I came in the league as a linebacker, you're thinking so much, and him being a Mike to where he's trying to direct the defense and get people lined up, make the calls, and then all, on top of all that, he's got to know what he's got to do. It's hard to really show all of your athleticism early because you're thinking so much, but you're starting to see glimpses of that athleticism that you saw at UCLA out of him, and the longer he gets in the system and learns it, the more we'll see that.
When do you think and where will we see him on the field? Early in the season, first half of the season, will he play some the auto? Will he be a nickel backer? I mean, coverage is supposed to be his strong suit or one of his strong suits. How do you see him getting worked in?
I think they'll have him in packages. Is he going to be involved? Okay, he's the, you know, the first team nickel linebacker, the first team auto. I don't think it's going to be like that with him. I think it's going to be a process to where eventually he's going to take over for somebody. I think there are certain defenses that he could play auto, but I've not seen him do any reps, you know, in the open practices to where he's taking snaps at auto. So I think that they're letting him learn Mike and Mike only this year. Let him focus in on that. And at some point, I think we'll see him replace Paul Posluszny as the nickel backer because he's just so much more athletic and he can cover guys one-on-one.
And then you'd have Telvin and Miles Jack.
Telvin and Miles Jack.
Yeah.
And you know what? Telvin's got to be better than he was Thursday night. I mean, those two big passes for, you know,
no
70, 80-something yards.
Somebody brought that up. They described it as, when will the Jags learn how to cover a tight end? Quincy Enunwa looks like a tight end. He's actually a wide receiver that they move around.
Yeah, 225-pound wide receiver.
Right, he's a big guy. But those were on Telvin Smith, right?
Yeah, Telvin bit up on the first one.
Even we could figure that one out.
The first one, you know, and when it's live, you're like, well, I'd like to see the all-22 shot. And, of course, you know, after the game, you're watching the film and you go, oh, yeah, that's Telvin, because the first one, he jumps up because it was kind of a screen look, too. And then the second one, I mean, it was a beautiful, I believe it was Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, he just moved Telvin Smith with his eyes. I mean, it was like stealing. I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick, I give him credit now. You know, veteran quarterback, you know, he went to Harvard, and so everybody said, well, he's smart. Well, he is smart because, you know, when on those particular plays, the first one with the screen set up, he kind of just takes a peek at the screen, and then Telvin jumps it, and then he throws right behind him. And then the next one, he kind of looks back to his left and then throws it right to the right of Telvin Smith, and Telvin Smith is just, you know, in no man's land. He got stuck, you know, and Ryan Fitzpatrick, with his eyes, manipulated Telvin Smith.
Gus Bradley talked after the game about, you know, this is an example of a guy trying to do too much, right? Just not taking care of his own responsibility. Is it as simple as that, or is this an issue that Telvin's got to really clean up particular to him?
I think it was a great lesson for Telvin, and it's, you know, when you get a veteran quarterback like that, he's gonna let his eyes, you know, try to play tricks on you. And what Gus is talking about, do your job, okay? you don't jump the screen. You react to the screen. And Telvin can react better than anybody because he runs a 4-4.
Right.
You know, and on the other one, he was peeking back behind and trying to maybe cheat to the right when in reality he had a guy drifting behind him where he needed to go to his left and continue to go to your left to take care of your job. And then you react to come back to your right.
Trying to make a big play.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I get it. You know, the more you get in the league, the more you want to cheat. And then all of a sudden you face a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick and he plays tricks on you with his eyes. Whereas when you play, who's a quarterback with the Buffalo Bills, EJ Emanuel, where Telvin Smith read his eyes the entire way and got the interception, was in the end zone.
Right.
Well, Ryan Fitzpatrick is not EJ Emanuel. So Telvin got a good lesson.
This one, quickly before we break here from Astro Jaguar, a little off the subject, but it's certainly in your wheelhouse. If Logs could use just one rifle for the rest of his life, what caliber would it be?
308.
See, I told you. No idea what a 308 is, but that came out of your mouth pretty quickly. Is it a versatile one? Why would the 308?
It's basically, it's a military round. It, like an AR, you know, you got AR-15s, you got AR-10s.
Sure.
It's an AR-10 round.
Okay.
There's a million different loads around for a 308. It's got the power to take down big animals. It's very accurate long distance.
There you go.
And it doesn't have a lot of recoil because I'm a sissy for kick. I'm going to admit, hi, I'm Jeff Loggeman, and I don't like kick of a rifle.
He just got his shoulder fixed. He doesn't want to blow it out again that quickly.
I hate recoil.
All right, Logs is in the house for another half an hour or so. If you can get on board, you're welcome to. It's 641-1010, both on the text line and the phone line as well. Keep coming on Twitter and Facebook. We'll pass along as many as we can to Jeff Loggeman. The return of Jeff Loggeman to Jaguars today. Don't forget, be listening for the Steal the Show. When you hear it, caller number 5 at 641-1010. Hook you up with a pair of tickets to the Jags-Bucks this Saturday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I mean, we got 3 games and we got a lot of practices left. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do, as evident from tonight. So, you know, we'll just handle it each day. And you know, we got a good week coming up. You know, we're going to have a couple practices with Tampa Bay. I think that'll be really good for our team. So we're just trying to speed up this growth process as fast as possible. But I really like how our team's coming together.
I could just have said race to maturity there, Tony, and it would have covered that pretty well as well.
Yeah.
That was Gus after last Thursday's preseason opener against the New York Jets. They're on the practice field right now, the Jags are, and we'll be out there against the Bucks for the next couple of days as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you as always, and now joined by Jeff Loggeman back for Season 3 of Loggeman Tuesdays here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Still awaiting. We still haven't given away the tickets, right, Tyler?
Still waiting. It'll be coming up here shortly.
All right. Be listening for Steal the Show and be caller number 5 when you hear it at 641-1010. You can score a pair of tickets to Saturday's game with the Jags hosting the Bucks here at Everbank. We're asking Logs the question of the day. Basically, if you had a question for Logs, what is it? And we're passing them along as we go throughout the course of the program here. Here's one from Dalton on Facebook. Jeff, if it came down to Denard and Corey Grant for the final running back spot, would the advantage go to Denard because of his blocking ability in addition to the experience he's had at special teams? Denard has proven to be better as a gimmick type of player, but how do you let Grant speed walk? I don't know who he's advocating for.
I don't know, but the look on Jeff's face when you said blocking ability with Denard was pretty priceless.
I don't think either Denard and Corey Grant, neither one of them are known for their blocking
ability. That's not
ability.
Their forte. No.
No. You watch one-on-ones and you're like,
Is this how do you divine this position? And this position group as a whole, we know the two top guys there. I thought Jonas Gray was having an excellent camp until he got hurt. You look at the bodies they have there. How many do you think they'll keep, and who do you think has the edge right now?
Well, I think, I mean, it's, you know, Ivory, Yeldon, and I really believe that the guy from Notre Dame you just mentioned.
Gray.
Jonas Gray is going to, I think that they're going to be your 3 top backs.
Gotcha.
I think, you know, Denard Robinson has had an okay camp. He fumbles sometimes. He's had some drops. Corey Grant has a skill set that, one, he would be hands down the number one kick returner if he's on the roster. He would also has great speed and coverage ability. And then there would be some packages designed for him in the offense because he does have speed that is just unparalleled. So I think Corey Grant's got a little bit of an edge there.
Inside edge right now.
Yeah, and I think that those are the four guys. I don't think they keep beyond four because I don't think that the abilities warrant keeping more than four.
Gotcha. So Denard's playing for his roster spot.
Yeah,
for
I think he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and the one thing is, you know, you can't sit here and you can't determine the roster right now because you never know what's going to happen for injuries and everything else. So, but, you know, I think it's going to be tough for Denard to make it because Jonas Gray really showed me something last year. And then he has had, when he's been at practice, has had a very good camp. And he's a great, great practice player. He's got a great tempo in which he conducts himself. And if he conducts himself on special teams like the way he does in practice, he's going to be a more effective player on special teams.
All right.
I wanted to ask about kickoffs real quick. How do you think it's going to shake out? I know there's been a lot of talk. Teams aren't playing their hand out of this point about how they're going to do this with the touchbacks coming out to the 25-yard line now. We saw a lot of breakdowns. It wasn't just Jacksonville. They were terrible covering kicks against the Jets, but a lot of teams had their struggles. In the end, do you think teams are just going to, you know, bite the bullet and say, all right, if it's the 25-yard line, that's fine? Or do you think the rule could actually impact it where we're going to see more opportunities for return for a guy like Corey Grant if they decide to keep
it? I think they screwed up. I mean, because I think, you know, the intent was is to have more touchbacks to lower the violence of the play. And now teams are going to do what they're experimenting with in the first preseason game, and that's kicking it higher and shorter. And the number of touchbacks that occurred in week one was down compared to last year. You know, you won't know a true trend until you get into the regular season.
Sure.
Because I think there's always a lot of experimentation, and teams want to test their coverage teams in the preseason. So sometimes they intentionally kick it shorter, regardless of what the rules change is where the spot would be after a touchback. You know, but I don't know exactly how teams are going to do it, but common sense would tell you that teams are going to try to get a tackle inside the 20 and that they're going to try to kick it higher and shorter. And I think the league, you know, if they wanted to end up making the kickoff safer is to move. And there's one of a former kicker that's out here that actually Jay Feely put this together. And this was something that I talked about back when they were talking about this potential rule change. Is that the reason it's so dangerous is because the separation that you have in the blockers and the coverage guys. And with a punt return, you're right on top of it. So guys are running with one another, and the contact is less violent because there's not as much separation. It would be simple. All you'd have to do is to make, you know, X number of guys, and Feely talked about eight guys up closer to the what would be a, considered an onside kick. So it would almost look like an onside kick return. And then have three guys back that can field the ball no matter where it ends up on the field. And then that way you have less violent contact with separation because there's less separation by keeping eight of the kick return unit within, let's say, 20 yards of the ball itself. And so now they're having to run with instead of retreat, and then wait for them to kind of get halfway there and then turn around and you know, put a target on their head.
Yeah, I think the issue with that, and I don't know if it would play out this way, but those, if you have three guys back, let's say you got your deep man, those other two guys have to guard against that pooch kickoff, right? That kind of lands in between. Well, what you see with punts a lot of times is because those guys are up, the most of the teams up at the line of scrimmage, you see a lot of fair catches because they'll hang the ball up, and by the time the ball gets down there, the guy's got no, escort, you know, so to speak. And I wonder if that would happen, you know, would teams be able to master somehow, you know, kicking it high enough inside the 10 and getting guys down there to where the guy's almost taking his life into his own hands to try to return a kickoff, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, look, when they changed the kickoff, they dropped the number of returns significantly. Should have either just left it the way it was or to get the kick return unit closer to the coverage guys.
Right. Well, we'll see. It certainly looks like this has got a potential to backfire from the intended consequence, at least this year.
I had a long conversation with Tony Khan about this, and Tony Khan was was the one that was at the league meeting when they were talking about changing rules. Like, look, you guys don't understand. You know, Tony was saying they didn't realize what they were doing, and he was trying to show them that it's going to have the unintended effect of actually making more kick returns happen.
Right.
And, yeah, I think they made a mistake, but, you know, they can fix it after the year.
All right, here's one from Jason on Facebook. Hey, Jeff, I know you watch a lot of tape. I was wondering if we could see more videos of you this season explaining plays and what the Jags did right or wrong. So let's just go beyond that and just tell people right now, what is your media schedule going to be like, including Film Room Fridays and everything else you do?
Okay, well, Monday night we're still going to have Jaguars All Access. Monday nights, and not sure the location yet, me and Sam, and then obviously a player guest. And then Wednesday night, we're going to have a new show that's going to be going on, me and the young lady that's on Channel 4, and I apologize because I don't have her name in front of me right now. We're going to be doing a show, and it's going to be kind of all aspects about the Jaguars, but not X's and O's football stuff. You know, so we're going to talk to different people around football, whether it be the equipment guy, trainers, or whatever. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's Wednesday nights. And then Film Room Fridays will be on. The Gus Bradley television show, which typically airs Saturday night, Sunday morning, that's going to not happen this year, but we're still going to have a segment with Gus Bradley, and that will air on Saturday nights, and it will be kind of a magazine-based show. So that's going to be a very good show. Not sure exactly who's going to host that. And then what was the other one?
What about the Gus Bradley radio shows?
Still going to do that. Well, obviously. Yeah, that's not going to change.
Right.
So be busy once again, you know, on Jaguars.com. We may try to do some more film stuff, but probably just the Film Room Friday for now. And then we will still have the Film Room review that we do on Monday nights get put up on the website as well.
Let's see, floor and the ceiling for the Jaguars defense in 2016. I don't know how good could they potentially be, and, you know, I guess that we'll just leave it at that.
Well, I mean, what do I expect? I mean, I expect more splash plays ranking-wise. I expect this team to find its way into the middle of the pack. You know, last year they were bottom four in the league, something like that. I expect them to be in the middle of the pack. I mean, that's a lot of moving parts to get to gel in such a quick amount of time, and some of those moving parts, the new moving parts, are very young.
Right.
You know, so it's going to take a little while for that, but the athleticism and the level of talent is higher. So I think you're going to see bigger plays, but the consistency is something that this team, I think, will constantly striving to attain.
I think that goes along with as well. Let me see if I can find the question on Twitter here that dovetailed with that. I'll come back to it in a second because we had one that kind of lined up with that. I wanted to get to you. Is the strongest player in the weight room? Who was the strongest player in the weight room during your time with the team back in the day? Who could throw it up?
Tony Brackens was freak. He actually was. I don't even know how strong Tony Brackens was because he never lifted heavy weights. But when he would do incline bench press, he'd put 315 on, rep it out 8 times, put it in a rack, and I go, I wonder how many he could actually do if he wanted to push himself. I mean, he was that freakishly strong.
Right.
We had a lot of strong guys. When I was in New York, you know, you guys remember the NFL Strongest Man competition?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they don't do it anymore.
No.
You know, because the guys don't want to risk it.
They don't do a lot of things. We always marvel that they used to play the NFL
beach
champ
football,
versus
yeah.
the collegiate all-stars in preseason.
Yeah.
Used to play it.
Yeah. And, well, back when they did have the NFL Strongest Man competition, we had on the team that I was on up there, we had 3 guys that were in the elite top finishers every year. Scott Mercero, who was a nose tackle, and he bench pressed, you know, probably damn near 600 pounds, squat the world. Kenny Rose, who was a linebacker that weighed 195 and used to bench press 500 pounds. And then Tim Cofield, who was a linebacker that we acquired as a free agent from the Kansas City Chiefs, and he was another 500-plus bench presser and was 240 pounds. But, I mean, Kenny Rose was the freak. I mean, 195-pound linebacker, and he would be bench pressing over 500 pounds.
That is crazy. You know, they say Percy Harvin used to do, like, 420 or something, and I don't know if that was the peak. I just remember reading stories about Percy that he could throw a 420 on the bench.
Yeah, I just remember going to the Jets, and, you know, all of a sudden, I walk in the weight room, and you got these 3 guys. You know, and you're
right.
You're watching what they do.
Am I supposed to be able to do this?
is this how they all are in the National Football League? If so, I've got no chance.
That certainly wasn't the case. Let's get Saqib in here before we break on Jaguars today. Good morning, Saqib.
Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, Log?
What's happening?
Hey, I just wanted to know, we were one of the last teams in NFL on third down on defense. What makes you think that we're going to be better? I mean, I know we got more bodies and everything. We got more better players, but I just don't think that we're going to, we were so bad last year. I just don't know if we can get better than we was on third down like we was last year on third and 30s and third and 15s. I just don't think we can be better. What do you think?
Well, first of all, the talent is better up front. I think you're going to get better pass rush.
Right.
You've got some guys that can bring it from the edge. So I think that's going to be better. The push in the pocket, and the perfect example of that last week, you look at Yannick Ngakoue's sack that he had against the Jets. Malik Jackson just pushed the pocket. I mean, he just pushed the pocket. There was nowhere for Ryan Fitzpatrick to go, and it made it easier for the outside guys because of the push that happened in the middle. So I think the push will be better in the middle because I think that Malik is going to be certainly a step up with, you know, Senderek hopefully getting back to form. But Jared Odrick, I haven't mentioned him yet. He's having a wonderful camp. And he is having a really good camp. I think he's going to help. You know, those two guys on the outside. And then you just look at the coverage. I mean, Prince Amukamara with Jalen Ramsey and
Gibson.
I mean, Devon House, Deshaun Gibson. I mean, here's the thing. If you have a little better rush, a little better coverage, and a little better coaching, which I believe that they have with Todd Walsh, because there were some things that Bob Babbitt used to do, and I went, why is he doing that? But you combine a little bit of better in all three categories, they're going to be better on third down this year. And in the National Football League, you've seen teams make significant jumps from one year to the next. And did they make dramatic changes or overhauls of their roster or coaching staff? No, sometimes it just happens. And I think that this team will be able to make significant strides. And I'm not saying elite, top five, top ten, but I think it's going to be very noticeable. And fans are going to be very happy with what they see.
All right, let's take a time out here. Come back, get more of your questions in. Take advantage of Jeff Logman while we have him in every Tuesday here for 2 hours, folks, as we'll be out at the practice field tomorrow with the Jags and the Bucks practicing head-to-head. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Jeff Logman here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
After a day off, the Jags get back on the field today. The Tampa Bay Bucks come to town on Wednesday and Thursday for a combined practice. Now, those practices are sold out, so no walk-ups will be allowed. Saturday, the two teams will take the field for the second preseason game of the season. And after an impressive run performance by Chris Ivory and TJ Yeldon, head coach Gus Bradley is excited to see what they can do.
What I can tell you now in practice and what we've seen, he's pretty good with outside zone and inside zone. Many gap schemes, think we'll wait and see as that preseason goes. I really like TJ. TJ showed me a lot. I think he's a good zone runner, but he had a really good gap scheme run in the game. And I thought he showed great patience and hit it with the right tempo this year compared to last year. It's better.
It's Bucks Jags 7:30 this Saturday at the Bank. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOY.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, you remember who the young lady was on Wednesdays?
Yeah, I felt terrible. Ashley Mitchum is going to be the co-host with
star
me on Wednesday night.
Yeah,
she's
going to
be a star, way bigger than me. So looking forward to that because, you know, it's going to be nice because, you know, it's not so football, but it's everything around the football part of it.
Yes.
You know, so looking forward to that and then also looking forward to seeing what they're going to be able to put out on Saturday night. You know, still going to have the segment with Gus. We got a little bit for the hardcore football fan and then also a little bit for the not so hardcore football fan. But it's all, you know, obviously Jaguars based.
Also, Chad was our winner of the tickets for Saturday night. Thanks for everybody trying to get through on the phone lines to Tyler with that. We just had the pair of tickets to give away to that. Listen, all throughout the week, other shows have other tickets we're going to be giving away.
Frangie tomorrow, midday chalk on Thursday.
There you go. Good enough reasons to tune in as if you weren't going to do that already. And again, come by tomorrow if you're out there at practice, if you're already registered, and that's the only way you can go. No walk-ups if you haven't pre-registered. Come by and say hello. We love meeting all the Jaguars Today listeners out there and the 1010XL listeners. All right, Logs, this Saturday, coming up against the Bucks. Let's start actually for the next 2 days. What do you want What can a team get accomplished in this setting? What do you want to see the Jaguars specifically try to work on over the next couple of days?
I want to see them continue to work on the running game, you know, against, you know, because that, like I was talking about, the tempo going up, you get a much better tempo for your running game against, you know, another team in practice. So that will be good. The one-on-ones, the wide receivers, the corners will be great because the Bucs have some wide receivers with significant size. The one-on-one pass rush will be very good to watch. If the Bucs have a fairly young offensive line, particularly young left tackle, young right guard, it's going to be good to watch that matchup, and it's great rep for the young pass rushers that the Jaguars have on the edge. And just overall, I want to see how things kind of work out. You know, I'm looking forward to it because, you know, the Buccaneers have Dirk Cutter as their head coach. He was the offensive coordinator here. Mike Smith is the defensive coordinator.
Daryl Smith is one of the starting linebackers.
Daryl Smith is playing Sam linebacker for him. Nate Kazor is their special teams coordinator. I mean, so you got a lot of, you know, Jaguar kind of flavor to what the Bucs are doing on their coaching staff. And it's going to be good to see a lot of those coaches that we're pretty familiar with.
How good, you know, going back to last Thursday's game as we get ready for this week and practice the next couple of days. I know maybe the most pleasant surprise for me watching the Jets game was how effective the offensive line was, you know, and watching that running game. And I said it when we came in here on Friday, if the Jaguars run the ball like that in the regular season, they're going to be hell to deal with offensively because of what they have at the wide receiver position and Blake Bortles. I was surprised watching that line those moving pieces, but I was impressed as well. I mean, can they keep that kind of continuity going into this
week? Well, you know, you hope that they can. It was interesting after the game, you go in and you do post-game interviews and obviously wanted to hit up Blake. And it was the first time I had a chance to talk with him on Jaguars broadcast. And I asked him, I said, how nice was it throwing the football when T.J. Yeldon is averaging like 7-point-something yards a carry and then Chris Ivory is averaging like almost 5 yards a carry or 4.5 yards a carry? And you should have seen the smile on his face. I mean, you can't explain that on radio because it's his answer now. But, I mean, I would just love to have had that on camera because, I mean, his face lit up. And as a quarterback, if you've got a good running game, it just makes the job so much easier. You know, we haven't talked about Luke Jokely. I want to make mention his blocking in the running game was very good, really good. He had one play in which he got into some space to where the guard Reed blocked down, and it made a big window, and he gave up a little bit of a pressure on that. But, I mean, overall, if, you know, Beecham comes back, which, you know, I expect Beecham to be the starting left tackle. But if Beecham comes back, you want to know how Luke Jokel would be able to do a guard. If the run blocks that are any indication of what he was able to do against the New York Jets, you're going to be excited about watching him at guard. Now, you know, look, it's not going to be given to him, you know, because there's going to be some competition with Shatley and Reed. But he had a very good game run blocking and very impressive. And even Parnell, you know, Parnell can play very well.
What is the sense you get about Beecham? Right? I mean, I know they say that we're not worried yet. We knew this would be a process. Are you hearing anything beyond that? Is there a hope or an expectation? Certainly there's a hope, but is there an expectation that he will be available to them by the opening part of the season or what?
I don't think that they have an expectation because everybody's body is different in how you come back from an ACL. You know, Adrian Peterson is like the freak on one end of the spectrum. And then Dante Fowler, I mean, you wouldn't even know that he ever had an ACL, but obviously it's like 15 months ago.
Right. He had a long time compared to Beecham.
And had, you know, no kind of time crunch. So I don't know, you know, and I think the Jaguars are very fortunate to have Luke Jokel and Kelvin Beecham on the roster to where you've got a guy that's got a couple years under his belt at left tackle, and you've got a guy who could be a little bit of an upgrade for Luke Jokel left tackle to have two guys that could play that position. That's a pretty good situation to be in because most teams are counting on one guy to play it, you know, whereas the Jaguars have two that could.
Will Beatty came in for a visit. I know Gus said it's more kind of doing their due diligence. It seemed like, although the initial reporting was the Jags offered him a contract. Is this an area, and we've had several questions on Twitter, basically, you know, do they need to continue? And you do this, I guess, with every cut that's made around the league, but is this a priority to look to, you know, kind of shore up the offensive line, or they feel pretty good about where things stand at the moment?
Well, I think that the reason maybe that they looked at Beatty is because, you know, with Josh Wells being hurt, you know, last year Josh Wells got hurt, and you're like, oh, my God, you just lost your swing tackle. Josh Wells was going to be a swing tackle again, but he also was going to be the one that enabled Luke Joeckel to get reps at left guard
right.
until Kelvin Beachum came back in the preseason. So now you don't have anybody. You don't want to stick Blake Bortles out there with Jeff Linkenbach at left tackle. No offense to Jeff Linkenbach, but he's, you know, he's been a journeyman. Okay. You want to have somebody that you got confidence that your quarterback is not going to get killed. So maybe that he would have been able, Beattie would have been able to be that guy. And then that would have allowed you to continue to cross train Luke Joeckel at left tackle and also get more reps at left guard. I think that's the biggest thing right there. But I think they feel confident about their depth. And to go back to Beachum again, can he be ready the opener? Maybe not. Can he be ready in October? Maybe so.
Right.
You know, you just don't know. I mean, send Derek Marks last year, came back, and send Derek was later than Kelvin Beachum. But send Derek, did you ever get the feel that send Derek was completely back last year, even though he was playing?
You think he's back now?
I think he's getting there. You know, but last year I never got the sense that I thought that he was ready to play in games.
People have questioned his place on the roster a little bit.
Sure.
All right, with Sheldon Day performing well before he got banged. I mean, is Senderic definitely part of the plan?
No, I don't know. I don't think he's definitely part of the plan.
What are you keeping there? 10 across the defensive
depends,
line?
Depends. Depends. I mean, I think it's going to be how good are the 10. If Senderic is back and he looks really good, you know, then yeah, it could be 10. Because you like some of the guys on the edge. But, you know, the guys on the edge, when I say edge, Leo, once you get past Yannick Ngakoue and Dante Fowler, do you feel good enough about Tyrone Holmes to make it on the active roster?
Not at this point, no. No.
And do you feel good enough about Bjorn Werner? No. You know, so it will be more big guys, so to speak, because you like Avery Jones, Roy Miller. Send Derek Marks is a question mark a little bit. And you like your two big guys in the middle, obviously with Malik Jackson and Jared Odrick. So could be 10. Could be 10, but 9 I think would probably be a comfortable number.
You know what? We'll watch this week's practice and game and get a better feel for that and talk more about that specifically next week because we're just about out of time here. I will end with this one from Blake Bortles Facts at Bortles Facts. Jeff. Blake Bortles has never lost an NFL playoff game. Do you have any Bortles facts that you'd care to share with us here?
Yeah, he's never won a Super Bowl either.
He has never won a Super Bowl, Blake Bortles. So there you are, your Bortles fact for the day from Jeff Logman. Good to have you back, brother.
Yeah, good to be back.
Twitter is logs56 if you'd like to hit Jeff up. And if you've got any outdoors show type questions, we take those when he's in here too.
Sure.
You know, and we'll see you out there practice the next couple of days. And look forward to hearing you on the broadcast coming up this weekend. Thanks, man.
All right, guys. Enjoyed it.
All right, there he goes. Jeff Logman with us every Tuesday now going forward. And a shout-out to little grandma, by the way, who's listening up in Maine this morning, who's probably the biggest Jeff Logman fan in Jacksonville. John Osher would think that's me. But she said, my favorite weekday radio program is back. This makes me happy. Hi, guys, from Millinocket, Maine. So we love the reach of Jaguars today.
Cool.
Check in from across the globe. That'll do it for us today. And thanks to Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato for Jeff Logman, for Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey wrapping things up. Congrats again to Chad, who won the tickets to the game this weekend. Thanks for all the feedback today. We'll try to do that again to a smaller degree next week as we get ready to get closer to the regular season. It'll be more about the film room study from Jeff Logman, but glad to have him back on board. Coming up next, Midday Chalk. Stick around. They're straight ahead on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You guys have a good day. Peace.